Do you like the garlic pasta?
Spicy.
Like a little prick on the tip of my tongue. Like a little.
Don't say that.
No!
That's awesome.
I thought that my shallot was a little sharp, especially when you pair it with these garlic blossoms, which are very tiny in size and yet
big in your mouth.
Big in your mouth.
It went from a little prick to big in the mouth.
That's what usually happens.
I was waiting for that.
Someone had to say it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of My Life as a Foodie. Hope you guys had a great Halloween. Had a really good response from the Halloween episode. Had 28 entries into the horror movie quote game. A lot of comments on the blog. Some new listeners. I didn't even know were out there. That was nice. So, cheers to all of you. Congratulations again to Jessica for winning this year's contest. Again, 2 years running. She's the champ. I think the key to winning that contest is just waiting it out, because it was a ton of responses early, and some were very close, but I didn't start getting perfect scores until I think it was the next day. Today we're talking Keller, Thomas Keller, of course, ad hoc at home, and rehashing my fried chicken experiment that I blog posted sometime last week. I don't know, it's all running together. I got a really nice email from Dusky and John at Zazu and Bavola restaurants. You remember, I was fawning all over these people. That was embarrassing. They're such great chefs and so talented, and that kind of changed my life a little bit. They heard my Sonoma show. They liked it and even included it on their monthly newsletter that they emailed to everybody. So, man, I was so stoked about that. Just real class. Dusky sends me the picture of one of their pigs on the farm eating yogurt from a local dairy. Katrina and I enjoyed that picture so much, we kept sending it back and forth to each other. The thing is up to its ears in yogurt, you know. You see this, and you realize, you know, this is how you're supposed to treat animals that you're raising for food. You know, they lead this quiet, happy life, peaceful, very healthy. Then the day comes, it's time for them to actually become your food. And, you know, that's the plan. It's quick, it's painless, and it's over. And the end result is meat that you can tell is real quality because, you know, it tastes like pig. It hasn't lived a horrible life. And you taste that. Did you guys buy the Food Inc. DVD? I hope you did. It was released last week. If you haven't, order it online. Pick it up at Target, Walmart, wherever you buy your DVDs. It's an important movie to own if you care about the issues that we discuss here. I bring it up only because there's a really good deleted scene that didn't make it into the movie. Joel Salatin from Polyface Farms in Virginia. He's just a real genius farmer and grower. He's got philosophy behind everything. And the guy just knows this stuff. I mean, he knows why it works. He knows why it's best for us to eat this way. He talks about why it's important that we treat animals with respect while they're alive. And it goes beyond flavor and things like that. There's this whole ideology behind it. He lets the pigs and the cows and the chickens, he lets those animals do all of his gardening and churning and pushing of manure, all the stuff that, you know, they naturally want to do. I mean, these are things they are supposed to do anyway. And people on other farms might use machines, but he says, you know, why use up fuel to do what these animals want to do in the first place? You know, they have a job. He lets them do that job. He'll let the animal be what it's supposed to be. And in doing that, we honor the animal. We honor the pig, the chicken, the cow. He called it honoring the pigness of the pig, because that's what they do. So let them do their job. And then, you know, we eat them. But you compare how farmers like Joel raise their animals to how they're raised in these commercial industrial farms, and it's just sickening. One guy in the movie is growing chickens for Tyson. He says, I can't even let you see inside that chicken coop. You wouldn't want to eat the chickens if you saw how we were forced to raise them. He said, most people who raise chickens, they don't even eat chicken. It's just disturbing. Anyway, got the Ad Hoc at Home cookbook, and I was really looking forward to reading it, to going through it and seeing some of the recipes. It's great. Lots of really good recipes in it. Pretty much set up like Bouchon and the French Laundry cookbook. Great resource for anybody who wants to cook family-style meals at home that use French cooking techniques and concentrates on locally grown ingredients, if you can get locally grown. What separates cookbooks like this from the throwaway cookbooks that we see all the time from Food Network personalities and all the celebrity chefs or celebrities that think they're chefs, these are really precise recipes. They're real. They're tried and true recipes that, when you follow them properly, they'll knock your socks off because the ingredients are allowed to do their thing. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, letting the pig be the pig. Let the vegetables do what they're supposed to do. Vegetables should taste like vegetables. You don't go marrying them with silly ingredients like salad dressings or heavily processed ingredients. People do that all the time. It drives me crazy because you take something healthy and you make it unhealthy. It's like a potato skin. You know, potato became this big thing where you have a baked potato for lunch and that became the meal. Well, it's okay if, you know, you're not making a pizza out of it, which is what people started doing. You know, they started putting pepperoni and sour cream and cheese. And before you knew it, the damn thing went from 120 calories to like, you know, 500 calories. So you can't do that. It's a vegetable. Just steam it. Maybe put a little olive oil on it, season it, and serve it. There's a blog now, Ad Hoc at Home, where this guy or this girl, I can't tell, is going to cook his way through the book. I'm not sure who it is. It's adhocathome.blogspot.com, I think. I read an article recently that said this is going to get ridiculous. You know, Carol Bleymeyer did French Laundry at Home. And it was awesome. And this all started with that, you know, Julie, whatever her name was, who did the Julia Child book. That's how it started. But, you know, Carol Bleymeyer did French Laundry and did it really well. And then after it was done, she decided to do Alini at Home. And that's awesome, too. And Ryan, he has a blog, Nose to Tail at Home. I like those blogs because of how unique the recipes are. And I think that these books, you know, Alini, French Laundry, Nose to Tail, They're books that people would be afraid to try recipes from normally. You know, these blogs serve a great purpose because they actually make the book a little bit more palatable for people. They're like, you know what, that is approachable. I think I'll buy it. I like the idea of following a cookbook and starting your way through it. I don't think there's a problem with it. I think it's very healthy. And I don't see anything wrong with the Ad Hoc at Home blog. It's not shtick. This guy says, oh, it's shtick. It's not shtick, it's fun. I think Bob Del Grosso, he's doing Mama Fuku at Home from David Chang's book. We're going to talk about him today, too. There's a lot to talk about with him. But there doesn't really seem to be much happening other than that. I mean, I like when people cook cookbooks. It's fun. It's fun to watch. It's fun to follow. But getting back to Ad Hoc at Home, the book, before it came out, you know, we started seeing these mixes and kits appearing at Williams-Sonoma stores. That were from Ad Hoc, Bouchon Bakery. We bought several Ad Hoc fried chicken mix kits. We gave them as gifts. They came in these little flour bags. And there was a Bouchon brownie mix that looked really good. I had ours sitting on the shelf here for a while. We'd given them all out as gifts. And I thought, you know, I should probably make this sometime. So I decided a couple weekends ago, I was going to do it and I was going to blog it. And I did it and it was really good. I blogged about it. So if you feel like checking that out, visit mylifeasafoodie.com. Look underneath this post for this show, and it's titled Ad Hoc's Fried Chicken Kit. It's got two packages in it. One had a brine mix, which the chicken has to sit in for 10 to 12 hours, and then this coating mix, which has all these spices and stuff in there. I don't normally, you know, buy shake and bake and stuff. I like to do it myself, but it's Ad Hoc. I figured, what the hell. The brine was actually the toughest part because, you know, after you cook this brine, you mix it with water, right? You let it sit, and it boils, and then you have to get it cool, right? So it's got to be cold, so that takes time. Then you got to marinate the chicken in it for a minimum of 10 hours. It was 12 hours? 10 to 12 hours, but a minimum of 10. So you got to plan this out, and it's really good that I got an early start on it, but as it was, the chicken, you know, it was great, but it took us so goddamn long to make the thing. I mean, I was dying. By the time we ate, I was starving to death. The chicken was really good, though. I mean, it tasted fantastic. The crust was really good, but it wasn't really crispy. I mean, it was crispy, but it wasn't like croissant. And I got spoiled. Now, do I think it's just like being at Ad Hoc for a fried chicken dinner on Mondays? No. Absolutely not. But it was a pretty good alternative. It was fun. But now I've got the ad hoc book, all right, and I'm interested in trying this recipe in the book and seeing how it differs from what I just made. I know you're all going to go out and buy that book, right? Ad hoc at home. Get it from Amazon. I'll put a link on the website. I'll share some stuff from the book with you, but I'm not going to share measurements because that wouldn't be fair to the publisher. And the last thing I want to do is piss off Thomas Keller, okay? I don't need that. I don't need that in my life. I'm just interested to see how they make their fried chicken at Ad Hoc and how it differs from this. The key here now, again, like I said, is the brine. You have to prepare the brine ahead of time. And I would think doing it the day before is probably your best bet. You know, you cook it, get it cool, let it sit in the refrigerator. It could stay for a few days. Then the next day or whenever you're ready to do it, you wake up, you take your pre-cut chicken, and you put it in the brine. It has to sit for 12 hours. The book says 12 hours. And as I said on the blog, if Keller says to do this for 12 hours, or he says for 12 minutes, you follow his direction. Not a minute more, not a minute less. He's Thomas freaking Keller, you know. He don't screw around, get cute with his recipes. So if I were going to share this recipe with you, so you could try it at home, and I was going to give you some idea of what the recipe was, I would tell you that you needed a 3-pound chicken, 2.5 to 3 pounds. Basically, the chicken that you're going to buy in a grocery store is probably going to be more than that. So you want to look for a young chicken, or if you get your chickens at the farmer's market, they're usually smaller. But you want a smaller chicken because they're more tender and they taste better. These big chickens tend to, you know, kind of lose it, especially if it's... Please don't buy Tyson chicken, okay? Right, please. If you're in California, Foster Farms, okay. Smart Chicken is great. If you go to the farmer's market, they have chickens, great. Sometimes if you go to Whole Foods, they've got these farm-raised chickens there that are fairly decent. And you can get a smaller, younger chicken there. Anyway, you want to cut it into 10 pieces. 2 legs, 2 wings, 2 thighs, and 2 breasts, which you then cut into halves. So you've got 10 pieces. Leave the skin on. And I like to remove the rib cage from the breasts. If you've got really decent knife skills, removing the ribs from the breasts won't be a problem. But if you don't be Rambo, all right? Just leave the bones in and just be careful when you're eating it and just eat it off the bone. Now, like I said, if I was going to tell you how to make the brine, I would tell you to take a large pot and put the following in it. 2 gallons of water, 2 cups of kosher salt, some black peppercorns, a head of garlic, halved down the middle, some clover honey, 1 bunch of thyme, 1 bunch of flat-leaf parsley, quite a few bay leaves. If you want to know how many, you got to buy the book. And then a good number of lemons that are cut in half. That's pretty much what's in the brine. And it follows what's going on in the Bouchon cookbook. Because I think it is pretty much close to that same recipe. You cover that, turn up the flame, bring it to a boil for 1 minute, stir to dissolve the salt, and then once that's done, you take it off the heat, uncover it, allow it to cool, then put it in the fridge for a few hours until it's chilled. Or as I said, you could do it for a couple days in advance or overnight, as long as it's cold. You'll make your life a lot easier than I made mine when I did this. Then when you're ready, you drop these pieces of chicken right into the cold bath of brine. Make sure every piece is completely submerged and then put it back in the fridge and let it sit for about 12 hours. Now in the book, Keller says no more than 12 hours or it'll get oversalted. So be very careful, all right? If you want to take out a couple minutes early, probably isn't going to hurt anything. Just don't cut it short by like an hour or something, okay? Again, you're cooking Keller, so if he says 12 hours, 12 hours. Once it's out of the brine, you rinse it off really well. Each piece, make sure all the herbs and stuff, everything's rinsed off, and then take the chicken pieces, set them aside, let them come to room temperature. And while they're doing that, it's a perfect time to actually start working on your fry station. Now, if you don't know what a fry station is, it's this. You have 1 plate or a bowl of Cody mix on the left. Then you've got a plate or a bowl of Cody mix on the right. And right in the middle of that, you've got a bowl of buttermilk. Again, you've got to use buttermilk, all right, because that's a really important ingredient that makes this dish taste and feel like it was supposed to. So you take the Cody mix, all right. In order to make Cody mix, you need flour, garlic powder, onion powder, paprika, cayenne pepper, salt, and black pepper. Again, if you want to know how much of each of those ingredients, buy the book, Ad Hoc at Home. It's $30. You can get it on Amazon. It'll be a great Christmas gift. I'll put a link on the website. You can order it. MyLifeIsAFoodie.com. Keller suggests using peanut oil to fry in, and I agree. I use peanut oil for a lot of my frying. Whenever I do French fries, chicken wings, fried wontons, stuff like that, I always use peanut oil if I can get it and if I have it. Otherwise, you can use canola oil. That's okay, too, if you run out or if you can't find it. It's a lot cheaper. I think canola oil is quite a bit cheaper than peanut oil, but there's a flavor from peanut oil that you're not going to taste if you use anything else. Chef Keller recommends heating the oil to 320 degrees. Then you start working on getting the chicken coated. Put half the coating mix on one plate and put coating mix the other half on the other plate, and then put a bowl of buttermilk in between. Season the buttermilk with salt and pepper, and then start working on the thighs. The thighs first, then the drumsticks, then the breasts, then the wings. You dip each piece into the first bowl of coating, completely coat it, tap off any excess, then dip it into the buttermilk, allow the excess to drip back into the bowl, and then into the second plate or bowl of coating. This you don't have to be too worried about excess. I mean, fill it. Get that thing completely covered, and if there's excess, let it just fall off, because you really want to bury it, all right? Once it's done, you transfer it to a pan that's lined with parchment paper, and then go on to the next piece. You work in batches. The thighs fry at 320 degrees for 11 to 12 minutes until they're deep golden brown and really crisp. You check the temperature, all right? Make sure that it's still at 320 when you go to do the legs. If it's not, let it get back up to temperature, then do the legs for another 11 to 12 minutes. When you're ready to do the breasts and the wings, you want to crank up the temperature of the oil to 340 degrees and fry them for 7 minutes. All right, then do the wings for 7 minutes. These directions differ from the directions that were on the back of the bag, because he said 320 to 330. And my temperature actually at some point got to 350 from 320. But it didn't do anything. It didn't screw anything up. It didn't really seem to matter. But it did burn the excess stuff that was falling in it, all that coating mix. And that's it, man. That's precise cooking, Keller style. I mean, these directions are super precise. The chicken is crispy. It's juicy. It's delicious. And the brine really makes this thing sing. People ask what the Colonel's secret was. And I think it had to be something like this. But I think they were injecting the chicken with something, you know, like a brine to make it taste like it did. Because if you take a piece of Kentucky Fried Chicken and take the skin off, take the coating mix off, and just taste the flesh from that chicken, it's really sweet. And you know they're not using quality chicken, so there's something being injected in the chicken to make it taste the way it does. It's got to be getting injected with some kind of brine or something. All right, so get this. From the creators of No Reservations and from the mind of world traveler, chef and best-selling author Anthony Bourdain comes a new animated web series, Anthony Bourdain's Alternate Universe. In this imaginative, exclusive new web series, Tony shares his personal and unique view of the world that lives in his imagination, mocking not only himself, but others that cross his path, literally and figuratively. This 6-part animated web series coming in 2010 promises to deliver some humorous and gritty entertainment from the colorful mind of Anthony Bourdain. Man, when this broke, we were all thinking Tony was about to jump the shark. In fact, Bubby said, is he going to jump an animated shark? It's a good line. But he caught wind of this. His fans obviously were going crazy. They were talking about it. And he blogged that it's web only. You know, take it easy. Don't get messed up. Don't get carried away. It's just for the fans, yada, yada. He says he wrote the damn thing, so if it sucks, he'll take the blame. In fact, hold on a second. I got this right here. Here's where it is. I got a clip from his blog here. He said, there seems to be some understandable confusion with the announcement of our upcoming web series, Alternate Universe. Reactions vary between WTF, and this time he's jumped the shark for sure. While shark jumping is always a danger, these dark, nasty, frequently foul, 2-minute-long web extras are not a replacement for No Reservations. They are not a pilot for some new family-friendly watered-down follow-on. They're instead brief, often violent, alternate versions of No Reservations, representing things that we could never do on the actual show, or, for example, my take on the network's Travel Bug promo campaign, about which I was, shall we say, dubious. So, stay tuned. AnthonyBourdain.com. I don't know. You know, I just do the damn show. You know what's funny? Scripps bought a majority stake in the Travel Channel. And now Scripps, you know, they own Food Network and this new cooking channel that's going to replace Fine Living. So it appears again that Tony is going to be working for the man. Again, the same bastards at the Food Network who gave him grief, and he gave grief back too. He's working for him again. And I hope they don't screw with him or mess with his show, or maybe he should, if they do, he should just quit. releases stuff straight to DVD. You know, if they released a DVD, we could enjoy all the dick jokes and stuff without bleeping. Because, you know, his show is probably 10 times funnier without all the bleeping. I mean, what, you think kids are watching this thing? Please. I mean, you're showing a vibrator commercial. I can't hear a few dirty words? That's silly.
Tell me something. Has anybody in this country ever heard of a salad? The new food fad sweeping the nation is the donut burger, a 1,500-calorie bacon cheeseburger with a glazed, buttered Krispy Kreme donut in place of the bun. It looks gross, doesn't it? Like some kind of giant zit waiting to explode? All that's missing is the whipped cream, maple syrup, and some pepperoni pizza. I hear the combo platter comes with a side of fries and a defibrillator.
Yeah, you know what irks me about that? You guys heard the last show. I did a trailer for Widowmaker starring Paula Deen. She makes the very same burger that she was just talking about. Now, either she ripped that off, meaning that wasn't her recipe, or they just didn't fail to bring up the fact that Paula Deen made that sandwich happen. I mean, my point is, where the hell is Paula Deen in this discussion? I cut the rest of it out because Joy Bayard just annoys the shit out of me. She does this shtick. It's not funny. It's forced. She's reading off cue cards. And none of it mentioned Paula Deen anyway. But seriously, if Paula Deen didn't make that sandwich, she should be called out for ripping her off, or someone, whoever made it up. And if she did make the sandwich, why didn't you mention her? I mean, does CNN have their nose up her ass? Or is she just off limits? I want to know, because that shit that she makes should be against the law. Fried food is one thing, but man, Jesus, let's show some restraint once in a while. Bacon, egg, cheeseburger with a donut as the bun. I mean, don't you think that's a bit excessive? Just shoot crack, all right? Get it all over with. Just shoot crack, hang yourself. Sorry, I didn't mean to rant. I tried to go rantless. Well, how good that did. F me, man. I mean, how does she get off scot-free every single freaking time? Every time this comes up, nobody calls her out. I don't get it. She's like a golden child. She's got fake eyelashes and a wig and her big stupid fake smile. She reminds me of Tammy Faye Baker. She's got a fake face, fake smile. You know she's covering up something. She's covering up death, yours.
Have you guys ever seen this before?
No.
Do you know what kind of fruit it is?
Starfall?
Yeah.
First Lady Michelle Obama hosting her own wellness summit at the White House Wednesday, trying to promote healthy eating for kids.
So when vegetables on your plate, we don't want to hear it. I don't want to eat it. I don't like it. It tastes bad. I don't want it. We don't want to hear the whining. We want you to eat it. Just eat it.
It's a call for nutritious change that's echoing in nearby Arlington, Virginia.
As you can see here, we have the broccoli and the carrot combined together with tomatoes.
Claremont Elementary School principal Cynthia Johnson says they're trying to get away from so much pizza and processed foods, but it isn't easy.
This may be the very nutritious for the kids, but it's got to be expensive.
You have to put your money, so to speak, where things are most important. And there is a recognition that nutrition, health, fitness is important, and it's important at a very young age.
Arlington school leaders estimate fresh fruits and vegetables cost twice as much as the canned alternative. This at a time when schools need more financial help than ever, and demand for free or reduced cost student meals is on the rise. Just this week, a government-commissioned report recommended new guidelines for schools. More fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and limits on calories.
We have apples. We got all strawberries.
Will it work? Some mixed reviews from some tough critics.
So what is everyone's favorite food?
Watermelon.
Tacos. Chicken.
But the message may be sinking in.
What is the best food that they serve at school?
Every Friday they serve pizza.
Pizza?
Yeah, pepperoni and cheese.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the pepperoni pizza is better than the apple?
No.
Those new guidelines the USDA is still reviewing as it tries to determine ways to improve the National School Lunch Program. At the same time, Congress is due to reauthorize the law behind that program this session, presenting what some call a perfect opportunity to refocus on healthy.
Hey, I started talking about David Chang, Mama Fuku. This guy is out of his mind a little bit. Groucho from the Beer Report sends this link to me, the 10 worst dining trends that come out in the last decade. And a bunch of chefs commented, and of course David Chang's outspoken anyway. But among them, now I'm going to read some of them to you, the fried onion blossom. Remember the Bloomin' Onion? I agree with this. It was a great idea when it first came out, but holy shit, fattiest thing ever. And people went really overboard with it. On TV, they were selling these things. You could actually press your own onion. So you put it over an onion, you press it, and it blooms out, and then you dip it in batter and you deep fry it. I mean, fried chicken's one thing, but man, dude, that's nuts. Of course, molecular gastronomy's on there, because chefs hate molecular gastronomy. David Chang said that not all trends start bad, but few chefs know how to do molecular gastronomy to make food fascinating and delicious at the same time. He said he sees it as fading and only being around as inspiration, maybe. But something feels disconnected when a chef has to buy a machine costing tens of thousands of dollars to cook. Now, I've heard this before. I've heard all the arguments because people know my passion for it. I've been told by chefs, people who work in kitchens, that chefs and kitchen staff really dislike molecular gastronomy because it's not real cooking. You know, concentrate on flavor instead. Whatever. You know, it's fun. Can we have some fun? Holy crap, man. The $40 entree was on there. Again, I agree with that. You know, $40 for a steak or $25 for a seared scallop. Listen, I don't care how rich the sauce is or how rare the scallop was, where you had to go to catch it. You can keep it. Proudly obnoxious fast food options. Hardee's Monster Thick Burger. Kentucky Fried Chicken's Double Down. I guess that's bacon cheese between fillets of fried chicken. And that's the bread. So fried chicken's the excellent bread, and you've got bacon and cheese in between. These are all big items that pack over 1,000 calories. That's making people fat, man. Yeah, I agree with that one. Here's another one I agree with. Knee-jerk online reviews. We were just talking about this. Extreme Yelpers and likewise. In particular, the opening night blog reviewers. You can't judge a restaurant from its opening night. It may be exciting to be there early, but to review it based on that first day is crazy and wrong. Two episodes back, man, I was basically saying that all the negative reviews should just basically stay off of blogs. Promote restaurants that treated you right, the ones you enjoyed, you had a good time at. You know, because bad buzz might be good for movies. In the movie industry, they say, you know, if they're talking about your movie, even if it's bad, as long as they're talking, it's good. It doesn't work that way with restaurants. You know, bad buzz will kill a restaurant. They're not going to remember you, but they're going to remember what you said. So, yeah, I agree there. Foam, that was on their list. Again, molecular gastronomy, I get it. You don't like trickery on the plate. The chef as a media whore. They cook, but they also sell shoes and star in reality shows. Sometimes they cook. Rocco DiSpirito was a prime example of this. This guy was a brilliant chef, had a great future ahead of him. And he does this NBC reality show, killed it, killed everything he had going. Now his name's a punchline to a joke. Something else they didn't like, deconstruction. This I like because it takes talent to make it work. Well, whatever. You know, they hit me where I live and breathe. I dig this stuff. I love modern technique. You know why I like deconstruction? Because it's education, and I like being educated. I mean, some people don't even know what Bernays is. They don't know what Bernays is. But they'll order something with Bernays, but then they'll say, no butter on my potato. Do you know what Bernays is? It's egg yolks, butter, lots of butter, shallots, and tarragon, and red wine vinegar. That's Bernays. Now, you take those elements and separate them on the plate, serve them to somebody, and let them taste it. Let them taste each individual element, and then taste them all together. And then they realize that's Bernays. That's what deconstruction is. It's education. It's modern technique. I love that. Now listen, I like classic technique too. I have respect for that. I do it. I try to do the best I can with that. But there's nothing wrong with modern technique. So they can suck it on this one. You know, chefs are really opinionated. I like that about chefs. Maybe that is what actually attracts me to all of this. I like the fact that, you know, cooking, when people automatically assume cooking is a woman's sport, you tell them that you're, you know, that you like to cook if you're a dude. I mean, I get that all the time. You know, if we're out golfing, you know, or I meet someone new and one of my friends will say, oh yeah, Phil likes to cook. He's a, you know, he's a wannabe chef. And these guys will look at me like, really, you cook, huh? It's not a positive thing. I don't get that, man, because listen, if you look at cooking, look at chefs. The whole industry is dominated by angry tattooed dudes with chips on their shoulder. You guys are cursed. They get in trouble. They get drunk. They're punk asses. I like that. I totally relate to that. I do. I think it's fantastic. You know, so, you know, I like when they're opinionated. But case in point, David Chang was featured on this segment for VBS TV. It was on the internet recently. And they followed him through Koreatown in New York at night with his assistant and this guy who co-wrote his Mama Fuku cookbook. They go restaurant hopping. They get completely ripped on beer, wine, and rice whiskey. And they cuss like crazy. It's 12 minutes long. It's got more F-bombs in it than the Beer Witch Project that we did on Dude Night. And people commented like crazy about what a dick this guy is. How difficult it is to work for him. How poorly he treats his employees. How he yells at everybody. And how he should just shut up and cook. Now, you know, maybe it's his ability to be himself that people hate. Now, maybe they're used to a chef as a quiet, introverted, genius, stuffy type. You know, they want class and culture, but instead they get this guy and it pisses them all off. It's like war. I mean, people are crazy about war. The minute someone does something to us, we're like, let's go to war with them. But you go to war, people think that war is like antiseptic. Look at war. Get a good look at war. It's horrible. It's anything but that. It's a nasty, dangerous, dirty business. And that's what cooking is. Cooking in the kitchen, that's war. So, no, it's not all class and culture. Well, here's an example of a night out with David Chang. He's honest about his inabilities, all right? He says, I don't think I'm that good. He knew that he wasn't great. And he always tries to leave room for improvement. Like Keller says, you know, you can't be perfect. There's no such thing. Because once you achieve perfection, you don't even know what perfection is anymore.
Worked at a variety of little establishments in Tokyo. Spent some time at Cafe Belude under Andrew Carmelini. There was a variety of things that led to me leaving. I was having a hard time keeping up with the rest of the crew at Cafe Belude. It sort of reminded me that I wasn't that great. The cooks around me were all more talented. And ultimately, I would always look at Andrew Carmelini and be like, I'm never going to be as good as him.
So they go to this place for called Mad for Chicken, and he raves about it in his own way, of course.
We are on the corner of 32nd and 5th. We're going to Mad for Chicken. This is amazing. Look how crispy this motherfucker is.
It smells good.
Wow. All right, these fries are fucking wet bullshit, but this is good chicken.
This is spicy.
Ooh. We were open, and like, we didn't get reviewed for 8 months. And I was like, man, we must really have fucking sucked or something. We did suck. So, it was terrible. The food was fucking bad. Because we were just learning how to run a restaurant. We weren't really I was trying to figure out how to run a cash register.
He says he wants a staff to be able to grow, be creative, express themselves. And maybe that didn't translate for people who worked for him. And that maybe they treated it more like a job.
I want to have a successful restaurant group. I want our employees to do well. I want them to have the creative freedom to express themselves. I want a lot of different things. But I'm not necessarily too thrilled with the baggage that comes with it.
And these could be the people who complain that he's mean. Listen, go to work for a kitchen in England somewhere. You know, Gordon Ramsay says it's like this all the time. They kick the shit out of sous chefs there. That's a nightly occurrence. You know, he's not making this stuff up. It's nasty. But that's what basically, you know, that's how it works in the kitchen. I think you basically have to be somebody who really wants to be abused to work in a kitchen. Anyway, so they go to this restaurant, Sambar. It's his restaurant. And guess who shows up?
David Chang.
He's a fucking man. That is Chef Jose Andres. He's a chef at Haleo Zatenia in Washington, D.C. He also has an award-winning restaurant in Los Angeles called The Bazaar at the SLS. He's incredibly influential, and it's a pleasure to have him here. It's a total surprise.
So, of course, if Jose Andres shows up to your restaurant, you know, what's the polite thing to do? The polite thing to do if you're David Chang is to tell him that the Spanish don't know shit about making ham.
It's about time we fucking show the Spaniards how to make fucking ham. It's okay. Thank you, Franny, for educating the Spanish how to make ham.
Only a crazy guy in Korea, Japan, China, whatever.
China, whatever. China makes some of the best ham in the world.
They copy from us.
Dude, that's like telling an Irishman that he doesn't know how to drink. He doesn't know how to hold his liquor. Or tell a Brazilian, now I'm going to teach you how to play soccer. It takes balls, man. Unbelievable. So at the end, he's got his drunk ass in the back. He's going to cook now, right? He starts making these pork buns, which are like big Chinese dumplings. You guys ever have pork buns, Chinese pork buns? If you've never had a steam bun, get your ass over to a traditional Chinese restaurant. Try this. It's insane. Anyway, somebody asks him what the preparation is for pork. This is the best response about how to cook pork ever.
It's a couple teaspoons of salt and some black pepper and a couple hours of don't fucking worry about it.
That is exactly how you cook pork, man. Season it, then leave it the hell alone in the oven on super low heat. It falls off the bone if you do it right. And never use lean cuts of meat. Shoulder, belly, picnic roasts, the butt, the ham, the head, anything with a lot of fat on it. You can have all the loins and chops you want. Give me the fatty stuff, man, and an oven in a few hours. I'll cook you some pork. It'll make your knees buckle. But yeah, I've talked about this dude before on the show. Chang's the guy who said he didn't want cameras in his restaurant, Mama Fuku Ko. If you go to his restaurant's website, read their fact. It's right there. It says, question, can I bring my camera? Answer, no. I said, look, dude, if you want to charge me $12 for a seared scallop or a tiny bowl of noodles, I'm going to take a picture of it before I eat it. Because for some of us, that's the experience. You can't rob us of that. But you know what? It's your restaurant. You make your own rules. Who knows? I think the guy knows how to cook. He knows it. We know it. He makes really good food. He can cook. And I'll tell you something else. Because of cooks like him, I'm beginning to really slip into this thing now where I no longer eat tenderloin. I don't eat anything that doesn't have a lot of marbling in it now. Because I really like the fact that, you know, when you slow cook or braise meat with a lot of marbling, it's the best ever. Say filet mignon to somebody who doesn't know any better. Watch him make the O-face. It's like, wow, filet mignon, woo, bullshit. Give me the shoulder, braised little sauce, maybe made from the fat that rendered off that meat, and some steamer potatoes, I'm good. It's got me visiting Asian markets more and more now because they sell a ton of this stuff. They're loaded with all these cuts of meat that are, you know, less than desirable cuts. Why? Because Asians and Mexicans, for that matter, they know how to eat. They were forced to cook this way. You don't see loin chops, fancy cuts. Yeah, sure, you'll have them. But for the most part, they use the fattiest, cheapest cuts because they know how to cook them. You cook them well, and they're just ridiculous, off the charts.
What's your favorite thing you eat before you go to bed while you're a fucking drunk as shit? What are you gonna say? Oxtail, fucking bone marrow bullshit. It's that fucking crappy ass piece of pizza that you ate and you don't even fucking remember that you ate. Usually it's like, wow, that's weird. I just vomited something this morning that I don't remember I ate.
All right, guys, that'll do it for this episode of My Life as a Foodie. Music in this episode from Chevelle. A lot of you emailed me, wanted to know where the intro song was from last episode. I didn't get to play more of it, so here it is for you now. If you like it, you can buy it in the iTunes store or visit their website, ChevelleInc.com. Thanks to CNN for the audio clips and VBS TV for the David Chang audio. Next episode will feature my good friend Afaf as we cook the wonderful food of Syria. That's going to be a fantastic show. Stay tuned for that. Until then, my name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao. Oxygen.
Saturate and die.